Welcome to Double Take, critical, sometimes confrontational conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production hosted by Johnny DiLoretto and John DeSando. I'm Johnny DiLoretto.
I'm John DeSando.
This here is Double Take.
It is.
And we're doing a double take.
Yeah, we are. You know, we had a recent discussion, and I don't think we closed it off enough.
We had two recent we have so many recent discussions, I can't keep track of them all.
Centered around Heroes and Rebels.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, you want to start there.
I don't care.
Because we're nearing election time, so we can talk about election movies. See, we're already, I'm baiting the audience. How are they going to connect these two topics?
I know.
Election movies or anti-heroes? Rebels.
Rebels.
Let's talk about Rebels.
All right. I wanted to bring something back that we didn't talk about in our show, and that was Easy Rider.
Okay. Yeah.
Now, are these guys in Easy Rider, Dennis Hopper, Fonda, Peter Fonda,
yeah.
Are they rebels or are they heroes?
Well, good question. I think we need to define what a hero is and what a rebel is. A hero, for me, in the movies, is usually someone who's rushing in to rescue, to save, right? There's some immediate threat posed to other characters' lives, or sometimes in these comic book movies, it's the fate of the world is in the balance. You know, someone's going to destroy Earth. All life as we know it will end. And so the hero or heroes come in to stop that from happening, to rescue people, right? Okay. But by virtue of doing that, what they're doing is saving the status quo. They're not changing anything. They're saving lives. A rebel isn't a rebel unless they're changing things, unless they are in some ways destroying things. And what they're destroying is usually the status quo.
Yeah, but film has frequently mixed the two, rebels and heroes.
Yeah, I think obviously, like in any other avenue of life, there's a blurred line there.
Yeah, yeah. Because we had talked about Rebel Without a Cause,
mm-hmm,
and with James Dean.
Yeah.
And I thought the title was revealing to our subject matter.
Right.
That here's...
And The Wild One.
Oh, yeah, with Brando. And that's more of the rebel, I thought, than Dean begins to become complicated because he has so many personal problems.
Yeah.
The things that he's fighting against.
Right. I think the first mark of a rebel in a movie is that you don't like them. They initially rub you the wrong way.
Like Brando
in The Wild One. But I'll tell you what my favorite rebel movie is. Hud with Paul Newman.
Paul Newman.
And on a double bill with Cool Hand Luke, I think is the greatest 1-2 punch of rebel in the movies. Now, I do want to talk about Hud for a second, because Hud is a thoroughly unlikable character. I don't think a rebel necessarily needs to be virtuous, because Hud is certainly not virtuous. But what he does is he does make you question, why is he just so utterly destructive?
Mm-hmm.
You know, he works on the farm with his dad. He just loathes his father.
Mm-hmm.
I think because he's such a stand-up guy, it rubs him the wrong way. But Hud is just living this small-town life, but he with such animosity towards everyone. And I think that that's what a real rebel is. What it makes you, he or she, makes you question, why do we want to keep things the way they are? Why does it just gall us sometimes, mm-hmm, people being normal,
mm-hmm,
right? And it's because people who are being normal or striving to be normal are hiding something, or they're trying to keep something, right? Keep something usually away from other people, and that's why I love it. I love the disruptive quality of the rebel.
And what you're clarifying for me is something that we had talked about, which is this rebelliousness isn't necessarily virtue. It's very self-centered in many cases. Doesn't have any global implications. Now, what about Cool Hand Luke? Isn't he put upon by society?
Well, the first thing you see, the opening sequence is of him cutting the heads off of parking meters. And for no real discernible reason, he's drunk and he's doing this. And when they ask him why he was doing it, I think he says he had nothing better to do. And so he's being destructive, right? And the first thing that we see him being destructive against is this systematic tool, right? This tool that measures how long you're going to park somewhere, and you have to pay to park here, right? So it's this thing that we accept as a part of our daily lives. This tool that measures where we are for how long.
Yeah, regimentation.
Right, and Cool Hand Luke is destroying that. And of course, you know, he gets his moniker during he's obviously a chain gang. This is what the whole movie is. He's playing poker with all his fellow prisoners, and he bluffs his way into winning a big hand, and he has no real reason to do it. I mean, he's winning this hand, and when he reveals it, there's nothing in it. And that's when George Kennedy gives him the nickname Cool Hand Luke, because sometimes nothing is a real cool hand.
And you're reminding me of Brando in The Wild One, and where he's asked what's he's rebelling against, and he says, "What do you got?"
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's what do you got? I'm against it, because the central tenet of the rebel is to just disrupt the membrane of normalcy.
Yes.
Right. That we all accept.
As opposed to,
and as we know right now in the current climate that we're living in right now, you can see people react against, you know, they hate that normalcy has been disrupted. They hate change, and usually the people that hate change are the people that have something to lose when things are changed.
Yeah. And in movies, can you think of a real hero, not a rebel?
Yeah.
But somebody who upsets things, someone who changes things, but someone who is actually improving society in some way or another.
Okay.
Can you think of any?
Sidney Poitier, I guess.
Ah, good one.
Sidney Poitier.
To Sir With Love?
Well, a million things. But how about In the Heat of the Night?
Yeah.
Where he is a detective, Mr. Tibbs, right? In the South, investigating a murder. And, of course, he has to come up against all this racial animosity. Right. And he is someone, it's interesting because this is the line, right? He is someone who is disrupting the norm.
Mm-hmm.
And yet we know this to be morally right. And so he is virtuous. Probably, you know, I think Sidney Poitier was taken to task by critics later, cultural critics, because he seemed to be too... he placated the system too much.
Oh, yeah, he was too white.
But I think, you know, he was really disruptive. And I think if you look historically at film.
Well, how about a less recognizable hero? But would you say in Green Book?
Yeah.
And because I think you were getting onto the African-American motif in this. And we know we have recently some very heroic types. But how about in something like Green Book? Do you remember it?
No.
Remember they're traveling through the South?
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about. One Best Picture.
Yeah, I know.
To the insult of many.
But yeah, okay, you got it.
So, no, I don't know anything about it.
All right, okay.
I would throw up Do the Right Thing and Spike Lee in general.
Yeah.
Spike Lee, first of all, Do the Right Thing is a great rebel movie, right, where especially now, I think people should revisit that film. And what they're rebelling against. There is usually something. You know, when a white guy does it, you don't know what he's rebelling against. When a black character does it, you know exactly what they're rebelling against.
Yeah.
And I think even Spike Lee stylistically as a filmmaker is sort of rebellious. You know, his films don't always adhere to these perfectly accepted norms of how a narrative should unfold or how scenes should play against each other, editing techniques. His most recent movie, The Five Bloods on Netflix, is a really interesting sort of film. It doesn't play by any rules.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very strange film. So it challenges that norm. What is narrative and how should it play out?
And I like Lee's heroes because they are so complicated and because we can't identify a particular cause other than righteousness, justice, But you can't, with his characters, you're always interested in so much more that's going on that's cultural, local, neighborhood, or whatever. And in there, you can extrapolate the heroic elements of that, but he never overdoes it, except, well, Malcolm X.
Mm. Well, there's a cultural rebel and a movie, so that's a good one. You're listening to Double Take, critical, sometimes, we hope, always amusing, confrontational conversations about movies. Double Take is a Cinema Classics production. I'm Johnny DiLoretto, here with my good friend John DeSando.
Yeah, we are.
So let's use this moment to kind of, we were going to do a show about rebels in movies, and we didn't get to female rebels. I think you can, you know.
Oh, yeah.
I think Thelma and Louise is a great place to start with that. But we want to talk about election movies as well.
Yeah. I do want to insert here in our podcast that Wonder Woman presents an interesting study of heroism to me for females.
Right, but we're not talking about heroes. We're talking about rebels, and this is my point.
This is the problem. This is the problem. Oh,
because Wonder Woman, as usual, because she is operating as a hero, because she has to save people and save lives and save the world,
civilization
from utter destruction. Yeah. She is necessarily, or by definition, upholding the status quo. You know, when things are good, when the world is stable, Wonder Woman's not out there poking holes in arguments or agitating the man. You know, she's probably, one assumes, resting, taking it easy.
but I like that, because the hero in that extreme sense is also the rebel. Don't you think? I mean, it takes our rebel to the heroic level. I mean, don't you think that the heroes like that, and Thelma and Louise, are going beyond the pale, and they are asserting a cultural right that they're trying to take, so they are rebelling. But I love your interpretation that they're actually fighting to keep the establishment.
Right, and I don't think I think it's just because of the urgency. The hero's work is urgent, right?
Yes,
and because it's about saving lives. Politics or you know, disrupting the system, that doesn't even enter into it. I would say that there are probably heroes, comic book heroes, that do rub up against what we accept as normal, and like the Punisher, who is so outwardly violent, you know, as to be disruptive. Some would say that that's probably fascist in some ways. But
how about Batman?
You know, Batman is operating within the system. I don't think he's a rebel necessarily. Okay. First of all, he's a rich white guy.
Yeah.
He's not, you know, he's out there solving crimes and taking down villains, but is he dismantling the system that keeps him rich?
I love that. He's keeping the status quo, as you would, according to
Bruce Wayne isn't, you don't see him giving up his riches.
No, you know? I know.
He's driving a Ferrari when he's not driving that Batmobile.
All right, elections.
Let's talk about election movies only in as much as we can point to someone, characters who are rebelling. Okay. Like, I would say we had a little slight disagreement about All the President's Men being an election movie.
Yes, right.
But I do think it's an election movie because it's about Nixon trying to get reelected, and this is history. He formed a CREEP, which I can't even believe he lacked the self-awareness to know what a disgusting thing that was. CREEP, the Committee to Reelect the President. And he committed a crime, Watergate. And it was about Bob Woodward in the news again.
Mm-hmm.
Woodward and Bernstein, mounting this investigation into the Watergate crime. Follow the money. They did. It's still one of the great political thrillers of all time. And it I think it's more than ever a relevant movie about the responsibility of journalism and journalists to report the truth. And if people do that, in this day and age, it seems rebellious to doggedly report the truth to the point where you disrupt the power structure.
Right. I just want to say that when I was looking over the possibilities for our discussion, All the President's Men did come to me. Mm-hmm. And I said, oh, no, wait a minute. That's not an election film.
Yeah.
But, of course, it has profound influence on elections. So right. It does. So can we? I think of primary colors as one that entertains me.
Okay.
And that does look at a flawed character, and that would be Bill Clinton, who would be the major source of the fun in primary colors.
Yeah.
But it does begin to show how character, personal character, affects election. And we're certainly into an election where character is as important as anything else.
Exactly. Ourselves. I think a recent movie, so we can, you know, lure people to something maybe a little more contemporary. Not necessarily a great movie, but fun for its performances, The Ides of March.
Oh,
which
good
is
one.
Great cast.
Clooney.
George Clooney, Ryan Gosling, Philip Seymour Hoffman. They're all great in the movie.
Oh, yes.
But you want to talk about character. You know, Ryan Gosling was working for Clooney, who plays an Ohio governor seeking to be reelected. But some character stuff comes up, right? Yeah. I think he's having an affair
Fair,
with
yes.
a young woman.
Typical.
And Ryan Gosling is this young idealist, right? And he has his principles corrected by this whole fiasco. And so I think, you know, when we're talking about politics, you're always going to run up against, I mean, in dramatic terms anyway, because that's the nature of it, is that some ideal that we hold up is being kind of broken by the reality of this business.
Yes.
And of politics, yes. Right? I mean, you could go all the way back to Mr. Smith Goes to Washington
sure.
for still a very relevant discussion about ideals and how the political system will systematically beat them out of you.
Sure. One for me that has been a favorite of mine, The Best Man in 1964, in which Henry Fonda is faced with real moral dilemma, whether to reveal his opponent or mm-hmm. not. This is where it's great stuff for me.
Yeah.
When it gets down to character, morality, immorality, this is what I love it. Now, the opposite end of that is the complete entertainment of Robert Altman's Nashville.
Yeah, yeah. You'll have to refresh my memory.
Okay, well, there's
been so long. I mean, I know
the central action is that there is somebody like a Travis Bickle type who is going to assassinate a senator.
Okay.
And but you're in Nashville and Altman is not interested in that, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
That just helps frame his story. But he's got all kinds of characters and operatives in here who are completely delightful, eccentric, amoral or immoral.
Yeah.
And that's the thing about election and election movies, mm-hmm. is it is really about good and bad human beings.
Right.
And most of the time, they're bad.
Well, I'm glad you brought this up. Because I'm going to bring it all full circle.
Oh, good.
The movie that we've discussed before, but we didn't discuss it in terms of it being an election movie. But Taxi Driver.
Oh, gosh, good one.
Is an election movie. Senator Palentine is running for president.
Yeah.
He's campaigning in New York City
right.
when we first meet Travis
That's
Bickle.
That's right, Sybil Shepherd.
And Travis Bickle, you know, Sybil Shepherd is working for his campaign.
Yes, yeah.
Travis falls in, you know, head over heels for her character, Betsy. And what's happening is we're looking at a character, De Niro's legendary performance as Travis, we're looking at a character who is presumably back from Vietnam, but he's mentally unstable.
You think?
I know. And in fact, in today's terms, you know, we would have to talk about this character as mentally ill.
Oh, sure.
You know, he's suffering. But what he's suffering from, or what's exacerbating his suffering, is the general state of the world.
Yeah.
He cannot articulate it. This is a young man who, you know, isn't presumably college educated. He's writing all the time. He's keeping a diary. We hear his thoughts. But that's part of what he's suffering from, is this inability to articulate the poisonous world around him. And it's represented by Palentine, mm-hmm. who gets into his cab, this kind of smarmy white politician who's just, you know, full of these bullcrap, you know, phrases. And, you know, and of course, he sees Betsy. He sees his, you know, ideal woman kind of being chewed up by that system, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. right? At the same time, he sees the corollary in Jodie Foster, the 12-year-old
prostitute. Harvey Keitel.
Harvey Keitel is the Palantine.
Right, exactly.
He's the guy in charge, yeah. Right? He's the pimp.
So Travis is going to clean it all up.
He's going to clean it all up, right?
Yes.
And what does a rebel do? A rebel does this by means that are distasteful to genteel society, right? So he just starts trying to kill everybody. He's going to assassinate Palantine. That doesn't go well. And so then all the rage gets aimed at Keitel and the pimps and all the money takers and everybody who plays a role in that. So if you look at the political system as the pimping sort of scenario as a microcosm of the larger system, right? Travis is doing everybody good. And by the end of that movie, you think he's going to jail, but really it turns out that the world sees him anew.
As a hero. I know it. And isn't that the corruption of it all? I just wonder how our election is going to turn out. I think this show will air before November 3rd.
I just wish we had more sane Travis Bickles to clean up the world.